3 years ago when Bob Manasco said, Dale Smith, we want you to come to Fort Hill. I said, man, I want to come to Fort Hill. He said, no, I mean when we have the Christian Gap Association meeting, we want you to come back and be with us. And I mean, most of you haven't known Bob as long as I have, but I think most of you have known him long enough that if he wants you to do something, you want to do it if you can. And adding the fact that I love Bob, and of course I haven't gotten to know Jean real well, but love her because she's been put up with him, I mean worked with him, served with him for all these many years, have a natural love for her as well. And to know the work they're doing here, and then for me to get to come back after being away for 50 years, it just was a thrill. And as I told you the other night, I had a little bit of a scare that I wasn't going to get to come, but I did get to come. Didn't dream I'd get to go to Serpent Mound and do the hike. And then after I did the hike, we'd get to come back out here and do the auction. And so it's been a pretty full afternoon. So if I doze off during this presentation, well, you just break up into discussions group, and in a little while I'll wake up and we'll go again. This has been a delightful experience. Some of you have wondered, what is it exactly that I do? What's Dale Smith's work? And I, a number of years ago, realized that I'm more of a dislocated preacher than I'm a located preacher. And so I do the kind of things that dislocated preachers do. I fill in for churches that are looking for a preacher if I have the Sundays available. And, of course, for the last number of years, about 12, 14 years now, Mary Jo and I have spent a big part of our time traveling around the nation doing a seminar called Every Kid a Winner, which is a seminar for big people on how big people can help every little person that they come in contact with, whether it's as a scoutmaster or a coach or a mom or a dad or grandma or grandpa or just a friendly adult. What we can do to help children to be what God intended them to be. Because we believe that if we pour the right kind of love and attention in the first 9 months and 6 years of a child's life, it'll lay the foundation for the rest. And for the first 9 months, it of course means from conception until they're born. And then in the first 6 years until they enter first grade. If we will get the priorities right during those years, then when they come to our camps, when they come to our Christian schools, when they go into the public school or wherever they go, they're going to be so much better equipped. But the key is what we big people do. And that's one thing that excites me so much about the Christian camp, because you get to step in where the dad hasn't been the dad that he ought to be, where the mom hasn't been the mom she ought to be, or where they have been, and you get to reinforce the right principles that the right kinds of moms and dads have poured into their children. Well, what I found out a number of years ago is that God has blessed me with a lot of ties in the secular world. I've done a lot of training programs in management. I've done a lot of training programs, motivational openings for conventions and conferences and so on. And about 15 years ago, Mary Jo and I began to just take a hard look what we want to do with the rest of our lives. The CEO of my company, unknown to me, liquidated all the assets of her company and put the money in Swiss bank accounts and died the following Christmas Day. And so Mary Jo and I had to start all over. And when you're crowding 60 and starting all over, it really gives you time to pause and think, okay, what do I want to do? I had just before that been doing a seminar around the country for the Brotherhood on Sundays, actually usually Friday, Saturday, Sunday, on God's dynamic church. How can we be the dunamos, the power, as a local congregation that God wants us to be? And I got to know some of you when I was doing those programs around the country. And another series on happiness in Christ. Because if we, who claim to be God's sons and daughters, view life as the world views life, and go through life with a hangdog, beat down, isn't it terrible, oh my, I don't know how I'm going to get through another day, kind of an attitude and outlook, how can we be a city set on a hill that cannot be hid? How can we have the impact? How can we make the difference that we ought to make? So I had these two series. Some of you heard Maybe There's a Mabel. And I heard a man today say, I heard about that. Well, that is one of the lessons from the Happiness in Christ series. So I did these two workshops, and then we built a secular business through the week. I had between 5,000 and 7,000 people a month getting a tape a month in the secular and general personal development field. And that all went down the tube. So Mary and I had to take a look. What do we want to do? We've lost it all. We lost a home, we lost a business, we're crowding 60. And what do we want to do with the rest of our lives? And we didn't know whether we'd have another 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. In my case, the men tend to live to be very elderly. My great-great-great-grandfather, Philip Smith, we're seven straight generations of Philip Smith, Philip Dale, Philip Kent, Philip Blake, Philip Dawson, etc. We think it goes all the way back to Philip Noah Smith. you know, the one who built the ark. But we tend to live to be elderly, and usually tend to keep our wits about us, sometimes just have wits, but we tend to be able to function pretty well. And so Mary and I did a lot of thinking, praying, wrestling with our situation, and where do we go from here? I went to Dallas and spent the better part of a week with Juan LT, the business coach to the professional speaking industry. She took a guy that I had met when he was making about $1,500 a speech, and that's about what I was making at the time I went. That's about what you're going to pay me for being here, I understand.
Yeah.
double that. Anyway, I went to Dallas and spent a week with the training team of the top person in putting speakers on the map. And she took this one guy, and he's made about $1,500 a speech, and she worked with him for a while and getting a focus, and then continued to sort of mentor him along for a couple of years. And by the time that 2 years was out, Zig Ziglar was making $15,000 a speech. And I got to thinking, I don't know of anywhere in the Brotherhood I could make that much for speech. And if I could just get one a day. and seriously, I spent my time with her team, her specialists, her experts. They had gone through some of my videos and so on. And they said, it can be done. There's no question about it. It can be done. I got on the plane going home. We had laid out what's called a waterfall PR brochure packet. And I looked at the packet. And I flew in home, sick at my stomach. Not because of turbulence, but because I knew that was not what I wanted to spend the rest of my life doing. And so we made the decision to start the Every Kid a Winner ministry, a program where I go into community and we spend a week under the sponsorship normally of a local congregation. And I come in on Wednesday and I'll speak to that congregation Wednesday night if I can get in early enough Wednesday night. Thursday morning, I'm at a Kiwanis club. Thursday, when the school bells ring, I'm in a school. I'm in a school all day long. Thursday night, I'm on the talk show, the 5 o'clock news, the 10 o'clock news. On a talk show that night at Barnes & Noble, or on Saturday maybe at one of the other bookstores doing a book signing. Because I found out when I wrote that first little book and got it published, I found out all of a sudden I wasn't a preacher coming to town out of millions of preachers that come to town, it seemed like, but instead I was a children's author. Wrote a book that had 90 words in it. No, it's just the way our world looks at things. If I want to reach that community, I know one thing, putting a billboard up even, and putting an ad in the paper that says, Gospel Meeting, Brother Great from wherever, is not going to cost one person. Now, you stop and think about it. What good does it do to put an ad in the newspaper and say, Gospel Meeting, Brother So-and-so, from so-and-so, Texas, Tennessee, Kentucky, or wherever, and then give the locations? Can you imagine the people running through the newspaper and say, whoa, look at this. Honey, did you see the newspaper? There's going to be a gospel meeting. The church Christ. What's a church Christ? What's a gospel meeting? That says nothing to our world. And so I thought, what can I do? What can I do to help our leadership realize that we're going to reach the communities that we're part of? We've got to get outside the salt shaker. Jesus did not say go into all the world and build salt shakers and invite the world to come in. Now, how can we instead be the people of God who are the salt and the light and the leaven? And how can I capitalize on the fact that God let me team up with one of the magnificent artists of America, Donna Brooks, who does the collector's plates for the Bradford Exchange? You see him in Red Book and Parade and so on. How can I take advantage of the fact that God let me find her after interviewing 108 artists to create a book that won a national award, second place national award. How can I use that to open doors? Now, you might say, Dale, I thought you were going to talk about how to grow. That's what I'm talking about. I'm just giving you a secular example, a combination example, and then we'll talk about some principles. So what I have done by God's grace, I never expected to be a writer. Mary Jo taught me more about English than all the English teachers I ever had. And got into Toastmasters, that opened a bunch of doors. God can do wondrous things through wondrous ways. But God let me have the children's books, and when the fourth one was out, then Lisa said, our daughter said, Dad, I'm sending you the first two chapters of the novel. And she sent me the two chapters of the book she's always said she was going to write. From the time she was 13 and came in and said, Daddy, is it true that Paul shot up the pool room at Beach Creek one time? I said, yeah. She said, well, why? I mean, Paul was this gentle old Southern gentleman who held his wife in such high esteem and loved the little kids and would play checkers with them and tell them stories and take them out and show them the hummingbird's nest. And he was so gentle and he was so... Why did you shoot up the pool room, Daddy? I said, honey, the guy he was trying to shoot wouldn't cooperate. Kept ducking under the pool table and scrambling around. I said, your grandpa was drunk. He was trying to collect a gambling debt and the guy got away. Paul gambled and got drunk. I said, yeah, but that's before he met your grandma in the Lord. Oh, a few years later, Lisa's probably 20 now. We're back in Muhlenberg County, Kentucky. Lisa comes in, and guys, I don't know whether you've caught on yet or not, but when a female does this, there is a certain negativity about that position. And Lisa said, Daddy, I want to know if Dawson Smith was telling the truth. Well, what did Dawson say? He said that one time, Paul shot the Muhlenberg County Sheriff off a ladder. Did he? Yep. Another story. And so Lisa sent two chapters and said, Dad, here's the book that I've always meant to write about the meeting and romance of Ma and Paul. A little later, she said, Daddy, I can't write the part of this part. I don't know enough about coal mines, but I want a coal mine disaster. And I want Smith Delaney, that's my dad's character in the book, to be the hero. Would you write that? A little later, Daddy, I want Smith Delaney to be accused of a murder. I want an ambush like Uncle Reg saw when he was a little boy. Would you write that part? And so pretty soon, we teamed up. And to our amazement, Turn Back Time won the National Benjamin Franklin Award for popular fiction. And as a result, by God's grace, not because of special skills or abilities, but because He is able, I now can come into your community or another community, and my book publicist, marketer in New York, will contact the media, the radio stations, the television stations, the newspapers, and we've had CBS show up at a local Church of Christ with the camera crew and come right in and take pictures and broadcast it on the 10 o'clock news. Now, this doesn't happen everywhere. But we in a mission field, Sheridan, Wyoming, 60 members. We had, by Wednesday night, we'd had 120 non-Christians. Some nights, we had more non-Christians in the building than we had Christians there. Why? Because there is a basic premise, a principle that is laid down in the book of Romans. Now, it's a premise that we're going to expand on, and in the context, the Apostle Paul is talking about the wonders of the reality that you and I, as God's children, are people who have been gathered out of the darkness of the world and have been made God's children. But the Jews are rejecting Christ. The Gentiles, under Paul's ministry, some are accepting Christ, some aren't accepting Christ. And Paul is limited to what he can do. Timothy is limited to what he can do. But the Holy Spirit can work. But he works how? In the new dispensation, God is not going to reach down to someone over there in the normal circumstance and convert them. What's he going to do? He's going to send somebody. He's going to send a Philip. He's going to send Paul. He's going to send somebody with the message, because how can they call on the one they haven't believed in? How can they believe on one they have not heard? How can they hear without someone preaching to them? And how can they preach unless they sin? Now, this ties in with an absolutely amazing communication model. And I want you to take a piece of paper and turn it sideways, and I want you to put this model down that we're going to develop here in a little while. Starts with an A. I'm going to pause right there and come back to where I was in my little laying of the foundation here of what we're talking about. When I come to town, what have I said so far? I said, when I come to town, I have the blessing of the fact that I can get media attention, usually. I can go into the public schools. I can speak at the Kiwanis Club, the Lions Club, the Rotary Club. What does that give me? That gives me an opportunity to let that community know that there is a church in this community. Now, I can't talk about the church and the school. But by the way, what do we include in the arrangement with the school? They send home with every child a list of my books and some description of my being in town. Now, if you tie that with the fact that I'm on a talk show, you tie that with the fact that your church may buy a little space in the newspaper, and I may get a newspaper coverage to do a news release about my being there and doing this program at the so-and-so Church of Christ. Now, what did Paul say? How can a person respond to a God that they've not heard about? How can there be a positive response if there is no awareness? Now, my topic was grow, grow, grow. But how? Now, let me pause at this point and say, can you tell me an area in which you'd like to grow as a camp? Do any of you need more counselors, more teachers? Any of you need more finances? Any of you need a broader base of people to draw from, to build attendance? In reality, all of these problems, I believe, come back to one or two basic considerations. Now, when I come to town to do this workshop, by the time we get to Sunday, a big part of the community knows we're there. And hopefully visitors start coming in the door. Now, when the visitors start coming through the door, what's important? What needs to happen? They need to be warmly welcomed into that assembly, into that gathering, into that meeting. And if they come back, and usually I preach Sunday morning, combined adult and teen Bible classes on Sunday morning, then 2 hours Sunday night, 2 hours Monday night, 2 hours Wednesday night, or Tuesday night, 2 hours Wednesday night, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm back in the civic groups, I'm back before the schools, etc., continuing to try to create as many, many points of awareness as I possibly can in that community as to what's going on. Now here's how this parallels with what we're talking about for your camp. How can you get people involved in the camp if they don't know you're there? How can you get more counselors if people aren't aware of what a counselor is or there's a need for a counselor? How can you get more people to give if they don't know what the needs are? And the communication model that I picked up many years ago at the National Broadcasters Convention. Lowell Thomas, any of you remember that name? Lowell Thomas was in the audience. Norman Vincent Peale was in the audience. Chet Huntley, David Brinkley were in the audience. I was in the audience. By the way, nobody in introducing me ever mentions the fact that I am probably one of few brethren ever to appear on the front of Newsweek magazine with the President of the United States. I mean, is that significant or what? I mean, how many do you think of? But at the National Broadcasters Convention, the night after LBJ said, I'm not going to run again, he showed up at our convention in Chicago, and that week I appeared on the front of the magazine with President Lyndon Johnson. He walked in, and he's standing looking right at me, and the camera is sort of behind him, pointing right over his shoulder. You see his profile, and right pointing right at me, and with a magnifying glass, my mother said that she could see me in the 36th row. and so that was a National Broadcasters Convention. But at the National Broadcasters Convention in Chicago that I made reference to first, I heard two men from Ames, Iowa, Drs. Bolin and Beal, and they laid out what is called the diffusion model of communication. I sat and listened to that and soaked that up and got on the phone and called Abilene, Texas and sent them a tape. I sat out on the floor and made them a tape, and it changed the Herald of Truth. It resulted in the Landon Saunders program being created. Why? Because those two farm experts out of the farm state of Iowa stood up there and wowed these great people in broadcasting, the biggest names in broadcasting, presidents, vice presidents, etc., of NBC and CBS and so on, and the rest of us, with the fact that there is a basic process that people go through from the time when they say, oh, when your camp is mentioned. They may not even say hold on, they may not have even heard it. Did you ever have Brother Dragbottom get up at the closed service and make announcements? you know Brother Dragbottom, don't you? And he'd been a member, and so formerly this morning, got some very important announcements I want to make. Everybody, be sure to pay attention to the mouth. Don't forget that we need some counselors at social camp. And the congregation is putting the songbooks away, and the congregation is putting their coats on, getting the kids together, and whatever else, and didn't even become aware, even though your camp was mentioned. So at that point, the average person in the average congregation, as far as Blue Haven is concerned, or wherever it is, ho-ho. But not much in parts of Texas and that area in regard to Blue Haven. Why? Because this process has been followed. But in regard to any new product, any new program, new to whatever audience you're talking about, the first stage is ho-ho. I mean, it's just a name. And I don't even know what it means. What is a Bible camp? What is a Christian camp? And so you have to move through from this process to where they are saying, wow, that's bad. That's bad. And I tell you what, there are some people in Cincinnati and Columbus and Huntington and this area that you speak about Fort Hill, and that's mine. Man, I went there as a camper. I was baptized there. I met my wife there, or whatever. And boy, Fort Hill is their camp. But I tell you what, I'll guarantee you there's some other folks that you mentioned Fort Hill, and it's all on. It's all on. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that's about. I'm not interested in that. That's not mine. So what's the process? First stage is an A. The next stage is an I. The next stage is an E. The next stage is a T. And the next stage is an A. What did Paul say? How can they believe on him whom they've not heard? The A stands for awareness. A person becomes aware of a camp, becomes aware of an Every Kid a Winner seminar being conducted by the so-and-so Church of Christ in a certain whatever city it is. They first of all become aware. But what do they become aware of? Gospel meeting, Dale Smith. I want to promise you something. Not 0.1% of the people in the state of Ohio are interested in either gospel meeting or Dale Smith. Aren't they dumb? No, they're unaware. They're unaware. That says nothing to them. It doesn't touch where they are. If you want to move a person from the awareness stage to the interest stage, or you can expand this and call it an IFG stage, that means information gathering stage, something special has to take place here. Something has to take place here. What they become aware of must touch on something, listen carefully, something they consider to be a benefit. Okay. Gospel meeting, Dale Smith. Why instrumental music is wrong in worship. Why we don't call preachers red. Blah, 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 blah. Now, how many people are going to get excited about that information? None. Unless it's somebody who wants to argue. In Kentucky, we didn't argue. We argued. Boy, he's a good arguer, I'll say that. He sure can't argue. Yeah. Well, so in the awareness stage, whatever creates an awareness that you've got a camp, that you've got a meeting, that you've got a program, that you've got an anything, must touch on something that the recipient would consider to be a benefit. So don't bring in Brother X to hold a gospel meeting. Bring in Brother X to help you know how to have a stronger family, a more harmonious family, how to build a close-knit family, or something along those lines that they can perceive right now. You know, I know some people that need that. In fact, I need that. I wish my son-in-law and my daughter would go. In fact, honey, why don't we go and try to get my daughter, our daughter and son-in-law to go with us? Why? Because it's dealing with things that those people are interested in. When you give out tracts, what are you going to give out tracts about? Give out tracts about something they're interested in. And draw them in into this information gathering stage. So you first of all have to become aware of something, and then you enter this information gathering stage, or the interest stage, and if you touch on things that I see will be of benefit, then I will move to the evaluation stage. Honey, you know, Brother Dave got up and announced that they need some more counselors. You know, I was talking to somebody that was a counselor, your poor ex. They said it was a blast, said they were worn out when they went home, but boy, they wouldn't trade it for the world. Well, what does that have to do with us? Well, is there any reason we couldn't take a week of vacation this next summer and go to counsel? Well, what would we do? What's he doing? What's she doing? She has become interested. She has talked to Dave or somebody and has gotten enough information to talk to somebody else, and that we'll come back to that a little bit later on, who says, you would fit in so well. Listen, you ought to go to camp and work in crafts. Maybe be a counselor and work in crafts, but you would be so good at it. Why? What do you do? What's that person doing? They are gathering information. Now, at a point in the gathering the information, you listen to the information, you get the information, and then you start thinking. Look at me. Start thinking. Does that apply to me? You suppose I could do that? Would I be good at it? Would it be worth the investment? Now what have you done? You've moved from information gathering to evaluating the information to see if it fits you. And then on the basis of that evaluation, if you think, yeah, and again, what do? You get more information, you talk to some people, call some people, talk to some people who've been there and done that. And then on the basis of the feedback you get from them, you said, well, you know, I'd like to go to the next meeting. You're going to have a get-together, some people are going to be down. I'd like to go to that. You know what that's called? That's called moving into the trial stage. In other words, you may not be ready to commit yet for a long term for this counseling business, but I'd like to know more about it. I'd like to sit down with some other people. Maybe I could go out and be a junior counselor. What's that? That's a trial. I'm not ready to be a cabin counselor or a tent counselor, but do you have a good counselor that I could go and learn from? And that's what you call the trial stage. And then on the basis of the trial, you either adopt, and that's what the A stands for, and say, counseling is for me, teaching is for me, giving my estate to that camp is for me. And so you adopt or you reject on the basis of your tribe. What does that say about us when we bring new staff in? Guarantee their success. Guarantee their success by giving them a mentor, by giving them good training, by getting their teaching material ahead of time, and by calling them ahead of time and saying, have you been through your class material? Do you need any help with any of that? And then when you get there, take them and show them where the class is going to be tomorrow morning or whatever it's going to be, so that they're comfortable with it. And then head teacher, sit down with them and say, how'd you feel about your first session? Anything we can do to make it better? What are you doing? You're seeing to it that in the adoption stage, that they have a positive experience so that they become 100% a part. So, wow, camp is my thing. And that's exactly what happened to me 50 years ago last summer. And I just stand in awe of what it's led to. Just wouldn't trade it for the world. So there is the model, the communication model that you're going to have. Now, do you see any application? All right, before I let you talk a little bit about application, let me tell you about what's effective. Can you in the back, can you see this part? Can you see this part up there? In the awareness stage, mass media is very powerful. Friends and neighbors are very powerful. Salesmen and dealers are last in terms of the major thing. When something new is being introduced, salesmen and dealers are the least effective. Now, have you had a visitor from your camp who comes on as a salesman and dealer? Comes on as a high-pressure salesman? Comes on as a gung-ho bang busters and doesn't lead you to understand the values? I've known that kind of thing happening. You know who the best salesman and dealer is? The very best salesman and dealer is the one who within the first minute or 2 minutes after you walk onto the floor of the sales department or walk into a house that he or she is showing you, changes before your very eyes from a salesman and dealer into a what?
A friend.
Somebody who wouldn't think about selling me that car in view of the fact that I travel as much as I do and need better mileage than that SUV would give me. Wouldn't think about selling me that if I've got a carload of little ones that need to ride along with me. And they're going to be cramped in that car that's got the big price ticket on it, or the good deal price ticket on it, because he's really my friend. Well, so we have to be careful that we leave, and that's the reason Bob has. Can you imagine Bob being a hard sales pitch man? I can't. Bob just goes in among these churches and loves these folks and loves the Lord and helps them to love the Lord. And happens to mention that one of the best ways in the world you can love little kids and love their families and love the Lord is to help them to get to go to camp. And they say, yeah, that's right, sure, can we help? And so help comes. Why? Because he creates an awareness without coming across as a salesman. He feeds information to them, stands around, answers their questions, lets them take him home with them, eats with them, and answers some more questions, brings up some things, and maybe talks to them about, well, you knew so-and-so, didn't you? Remember how they helped us start the camp back when? And creates that friend and neighbor relationship. Now, there's something interesting here. I won't have time to go into depth about this. Mass media is in second place in getting basic information out. Friends and neighbors are the most powerful. Salesmen and dealers are last. Why mass media? Because if you blanket all the congregations in your area with information about the camp, a lot of people are going to read it and become aware of it. But friends and neighbors are powerful because though you don't have as many of them that know the camp and can tell the story, they are held in high esteem, in higher esteem. If you say to me, Dale, listen, I've got a Chrysler Town and Country. I get 24, 26, 28 miles to gallon. It handles wonderfully. Yeah, I had a Windstar before. Now, if you're a salesman and a dealer, I'm going to be questioning what you say. But if you're just a good friend who's recommending a Chrysler, I'll probably consider a Chrysler if I want that kind of a vehicle. So friends and neighbors are in a powerful position here. Now, we move from when I'm gathering information about it, and I'm beginning to take that information and say, would that fit me? Would that apply to me? Now, what's in first place? I want to know, would it really work for me? Can I really do it? Am I going to get that out of a brochure? No. Friends and neighbors move into first place in the evaluation stage. Mass media still has its impact. You still get the bulletin. You still get the newsletter. You still get whatever's available, depending on what it is you're talking about. Salesmen and dealers stay in last place. Have you ever heard a preacher on the radio that sounded like salesman and dealer? Again and again and again. Have you heard of Batselberry Baxter? The older timers have. Did Batselberry Baxter sound like a salesman and dealer? No, he sounded like a very wonderful, warm, genuine person who really cared about your well-being. Makes all the difference in the world. So, from here on across, it stays the same. In the trial stage, my friend and neighbor stand aside and say, Dale, you've really did a great job with those kids. I watched how they interacted in that class. You know, it was something you did that was really sharp. And what was that? When you, and I'm thinking, yeah, that did go well, didn't it? Now all of a sudden, I'm being reinforced. Who is doing it? A friend and neighbor. And the next day I have some problems. Man, I run into a brick wall. I have a real outrageous situation with one of my kids. And I feel like, man, this is just not for me. But head teacher has the insights, helped me understand that child more. And why, when I said what I said or dealt with it, as I dealt with it, it went over the wrong way. And helped me see how to deal with it. Friend and neighbor helping me in, as I'm developing as a teacher or a counselor or whatever it may be. And then that continues. Now that I'm a part of the staff and I plan to come back, but I need the reinforcement of people that I respect and feel that their advice is only going to always be in my best interest. So there's your basic communication model. Now, how would it apply? Can you think of any ways it might apply to any aspect of what you're doing in terms of wanting to grow? What are some areas that you want to grow in? Give me some feedback. Do you have any areas that you'd like to grow in? All got it made in the shade? Or is it just because this is the last night of camp that you're not saying much? What's that? Support. Financial support. Why don't you have the financial support that you could have? Well, it's largely because people aren't either aware of the need or they haven't had a friend and neighbor. And Bob mentioned this, I believe, or someone here, that you have someone that's developed a tremendous skill to sit down with people and explain the need. Now, if that person comes in as a friend and neighbor, if they see them as a friend and neighbor, there's a receptivity there. But before that can happen, what do you need to have? You need something that will create a broad base of awareness of the opportunity that your camp gives, that people can participate in, can invest in, if you want to think of it that way. So first of all, you've got to have some tools and some awareness that will create the awareness. And if we think that Brother Dragbottom announcing at church at the close of services that anybody wants to give to the camp can sure do so, that's not going to get it done. All right, what else? We'll come back to that one in a minute, in another context of support. What else would you want to grow in? Do any of you have a session that's weak in attendance? For a lot of camps, it's the first camp. It's the junior camp. For some others, that one is full. I was interested in the bell curve. Was it this camp that had the bell curve? that showed, you know, a little smaller attendance down here, and then it came up to 12 or 13, lots and lots of kids, 12 or 13, and then tapers off. Well, Wisconsin doesn't do that. It goes, yeah. Okay, what are we going to do about it, guys? If we want to get more 9-year-olds there and 10-year-olds there, tell me some things that need to happen on the basis of this model. Can you tell me anything that needs to happen if we want some 9-year-olds and 10-year-olds to come to camp?
One thing we did a while back was split our routes and have the older kids go first.
Uh-huh.
They went home telling the good stories.
Okay. So you sent your older kids home with great stories about camp, and that intrigued the little ones.
And that's the first thing.
And he touched on something there. It's very important. You want to build attendance at your camp. Who's the best attendance builder? The campers are. And so what do? You create situations. So what do? You have a night when somebody's going to come and bring pictures from last year's camp, and a whole bunch of kids are going to come, and you get the kids from other congregations in town or close by to come together, and you get all the kids in that home congregation there that you can get there. And what have you got? You've got a bunch of salesmen to deal. Say, yeah, man, I remember that. Boy, that was a fun night. Whoo, that was cool. Man, I can't wait to do it again. What about your literature? If you're aiming at the junior campers, do you have any quotes from 9-year-olds? Man, I was scared to death I'd be homesick, but I got to camp and I had such a good time that I forgot to be homesick till the night before camp was over, and then I was so tired and so happy and so excited that I wasn't homesick then. The next day I went home, and now I can't wait to go back. Now you put a letter like that in there, and some other 9-10-year-olds that are worried about being homesick think, maybe I won't be homesick after all. What are you doing? Focus, listen carefully to this, focus on benefits instead of focusing on features. What does that mean? That means focus on the activity, not the fact that you have it. We have an Olympic-sized swimming pool. No. We have an Olympic-sized swimming pool that allows us to have, and then talk about the great activities that you can have. We have horseback riding, and we have boys and girls that come to camp that are scared of horses, and before camp is over, they are in love with horseback riding, and they, in other words, think of the benefits. If you think of a feature, we have 17 cabins. So what? Which means that your child who comes to camp will have a cabin with 6 or 8 boys and girls, or boys or girls, their age, and at least 2 adults in the cabin with them. Now that's talking about a benefit. They're going to have the security and a small group. So don't talk about features unless you talk about benefits. And so write a list of features that your camp has. Activities to have, facilities to have, whatever, and then say, what are the benefits? And then the leaflets that you send out, the brochures that you send out, the presentations that you make, focus on the benefits. Focus on benefits, not on features. If you mention a feature, it's only to say, this provides us the opportunity. We have hiking trails that let boys and girls see nature, and then add to that. And it will grab the potential grandparent that might pay the way for the kids to come to camp. It may grab the parents to create a sense of security and a value and worth, and then grab the attention of the child so that they want to be there to be a part of it. And so, again, you've got to create awareness and then go from awareness to interest. And if you don't touch on benefits in the awareness stage, they're not going to be interested. But if you talk about benefits in the awareness stage and the information gathering stage, then in the evaluation stage, it all blends together to say, yes, this will work for you, this will work for your child. This will work as something for you to be a part of. Okay, so if you want to build attendance, how are you going to grow in attendance? You're going to create as broad a base of awareness of benefits that people can have from coming to camp, the kids can have from coming to camp. And then you're going to create some friend and neighbor opportunities like youth rallies, like times for the kids to get together, maybe a website that the kids can participate in and stay in touch with each other, a newsletter that goes out. I remember we had we had a fall hall newsletter of some type put out by the senior campers. And it was great. It was just absolutely great. And the kids get that newsletter 2-3 times in between camp sessions, and it incited their interest in coming back and being a part of the next year's session. So this little model is a model that can be used in regard to any aspect, from fundraising to building attendance to strengthening your staff, whatever it is you have. Start by creating awareness on as broad a base as you can, because not everybody's going to be interested. But talk about benefits, and then as people begin to surface, find some way to reinforce the friend and neighbor. And so when somebody's name comes to you as showing some interest, send information to them and contact somebody in the congregation or area and have them talk to them, encourage them to be interested. Okay, our time's up except for discussion, I believe. We're supposed to end at 9 and then open the floor for discussion. So this is just a little short synopsis of what could be a breakdown into small groups to discuss a lot of these to people who aren't aware of it, and there's nobody to tell them about it. We ought to realize the same thing is true in regard to having a great camp, because I guarantee you there are people that are in the circle of geographic circle of your camp that are totally oblivious, others that are functionally oblivious to the fact that you have a camp. Others know you have a camp, but they just don't think of it in terms of being anything for them. It's sort of like announcing we're going to have a gospel meeting, and 2/3 of the people already assume they're not going to come because it's not for us. That's for the leaders, elders, and preachers, and people like that, I guess. And so this is a basic premise that the Apostle Paul touches on, that before people can be interested in something, they've got to be aware of it. And when they become aware of it, it must be framed in terms of what their interests are and what would be of a benefit to them. And then it needs to be reinforced through friends and neighbors. Yeah. Questions or comments?
We create awareness at the beginning of the camp season by bringing everyone that has been to camp at any capacity the year before up on the pulpit, and for everybody to see and have their own best advertisement, I guess. The kids are always happy to do that, and the adults, from the dishwashers to the cooks, and we have a lot of adults that go. And then after each week of camp, we do the same thing. After they've already been, we bring them back up, and they sing their song or whatever they want to do.
Okay.
And Larry Sawyer is a big rah-rah for camp, and so we always have a lot of interest developed by the kids, and then more kids want to come. So it's pretty successful.
All right, so what she said is that they have everybody that was at camp last year. As this year's camp session begins to begin to move toward it, have all those kids up on the platform, up on the pulpit, and all the people who taught or cooked or did anything at camp, have them all up there, and that way you get that much exposure, that many people, and kids that didn't go see those kids up there and can talk to them about it, and other adults can think, well, hey, if Trudy went last year and cooked, I can go this year and cook. And so that creates awareness. Then after camp, they do the same thing. Get everybody up front, everybody up on the stage. And that certainly would create a broad base of awareness and create a lot of the tentacles of influence through friends and neighbors that have been involved in camp. Yes?
Blue Hand Neighbors program, basically we're on the last night of each session, we really emphasize, hey, these campers have been here for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They come up and we acknowledge them, we give them a pin, and then they get to light the local campfire.
Oh, okay.
Now, if we also acknowledge one of them for 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, 9 years, mm-hmm. to encourage those kids to keep coming back.
All right, so the idea there is that the closing of camp, you recognize those that have been there 5 years or more, and you give the 5-year kids a recognition. Fort Hill, do you still give the plaque? At the 5 years, or they give a beautiful plaque to a kid that's been to camp for 5 years, and so that would encourage continuity. And I don't know. I was thinking about some of the camps I've worked with, and so on. I think we should have capitalized on the idea. Here's somebody who's been to camp every year since they were old enough to come to camp. And boy, again, at Wisconsin, there's not a drop-off at senior camp. I mean, the kids come the last year they can come and then beg to get to come back as junior counselor next year. Usually don't work out, but they want to be there because it's just so much part of their life. All right, what other comments? Yes?
One of the things that took in mind, you just mentioned, one of the things that we like to do as users is to be intentional, and if we go toward mentoring or maybe even developing new staff down the road, what I like to do sometimes is that all of the counselors and the teachers who are there, who at one time were a camper, camp concern, maybe even a camper anywhere, stand up.
Uh-huh.
And it's amazing, you know, like usually 75% of the people who are there stand up and raise their hand or whatever, and all the little kids are like, ooh,
yeah.
You say, this is going to be you someday.
Yeah.
This is really what you're going to be. And then from 8 years old, I have kids on my staff right now who I remember when they were going to a camp.
Really? So his comment, I'm saying this for the benefit of the recording as much as any, is that by acknowledging the older campers, the campers have been there several years and so on, you really plant a seed in the heart of the younger campers that's where they want to be in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, or whatever it may be. And again, it encourages continuity, and it encourages them to feel that they're part of the big picture for the long haul, and those are the kids that a lot of times would become future board members and staff members and whatever. Yeah. Yes. Oh, so you're saying you combine not only the years they were campus campers, if they were, but also on the staff. Yeah, family camps. Yeah. Okay. And include the years the people been there as adult campers. Yeah. A plaque that acknowledges all the people who've been involved with the camp for 25 years. So. Do you see any implications of this that you think you can put to work? I don't want you to look at this and not do something with it. Not do something, just not go on same old, same old. Let's come up with some new ways of creating awareness among some different people. And then not only awareness, but then interest and an evaluation that ends up by them saying, yeah, I can do that. At least I can give it a try. And I think one of the valuable things we can do is bring on adults as assistants, an assistant teacher. Could you go this year and help teach the class of sign language? And by the way, that's something else I recommend, and I didn't touch on it much the other night, but folks, make it your goal to see to it that every child who comes to camp goes away from camp with a better view of himself, herself, and of God, and of Christ, and a part of the better view of themselves. See to it that they have developed some new skill or ability or knowledge. And look over your kids after the first two or three days and say, is there a kid that's being left out? A kid that is not catching on? And home in on each one of those children. I want every child to go away from my camp better, more what they ought to be, more what God wants them to be. And that means I may have a kid here that can't memorize scriptures very well, and he can't lead singing, and he's not an athlete, but I got to find something that boy or that girl can excel in or can at least improve in, so that they go away feeling better about themselves and better about what they can be. Because if they do, likely they're going to come back next year to get some more, to grow some more. And that's exactly what we want to have happen.
I know I'm kind of new to the director side of this, but as a youth minister, about 3 weeks out of Blue Haven every year, I would call.
Uh-huh.
And I'd say, hey, you got any openings in my session? And they'd say, yeah, we have four boys. And I would hang up the phone and I would look at my list of kids in my youth group and target some boys that needed to go to camp. And I would raise money for them or whatever, and we would be in those spots. And I know if I would do that as a youth minister,
the people that we have going to your, all of our camps, if they were aware of those openings, they can do the same thing. And it's a simple thing, picking up the phone and saying, hey, we got openings for three high school girls. You know, you have any girls, you got scholarship maybe, we want to fill a spot. You know, a few phone calls to
His point is that, that youth ministers, other people in the congregation who have a finger to the pulse of both the kids and the camp, be aware of when there are, where there are openings that kids could be plugged into, and then think which of your children could be plugged into those spots, and get on the ball to get them sold on being there, and if you have to raise money, scholarships, or whatever to get them there. And then when they get there, again, make sure that you've got programs that give them opportunity to excel, to grow. And I guess I've got a little bit of a hang up on that bit, but I think it's a good hang up. Because I don't want us to have camps that only honor and recognize the work of people who have already, when they came to camp, had Bible knowledge, had song leading skills, had athletic ability. I want us to find a place for the little stumble bump. I've got a grandson who's going to be going to camp this year for the first time, probably. And Gary can't throw a softball. He can't dribble a basketball. He is as unathletic as he can be. But he's also a genius. Takes after his grandpa. On the other side. He is a genius. I mean, I'm not kidding about that. He is literally a genius. At the end of third grade, took the Stanford exams, and is post-high school in math problem solving, post-high school in reading comprehension, post-high school in about four departments. And I told Lisa, well, Lisa, I had the same kind of scores. And she said, yeah, but you were a junior in college. but here's the point. Gary could go to camp, and while he can memorize the scriptures and some of those things, if his sense of his worth is bound up in the fact that he couldn't play on the ball field, and he couldn't make the grade in athletic activities, I'm going to be upset. Now I'm hoping as a result of going to camp, he'll begin to pick up some athletic skills. He'll begin to learn to do some things like that, and not just mental things. I mean, he's good at those, but I want him to go to camp, and I want him to come away more fully rounded. Yeah.
Several years ago, in this issue of alternative ways to pursue, we always have everyone participating in some athletic activity, but it's not pushed real hard. Winning is not really valued that much. But still, it is a game. One young girl, and at the time she was about 11 or 12, and was very unathletic. And but we always have crazy Olympics, is what we call it then, but it's stupid games. And there was a relay race, and she was running the last drag of the duck walk, where you held her heels and kind of waddled. And her team gave her almost a full lap lead, and she was leaping. She was the last runner. And she won the race. Just barely. But the kids cheering and shouting, and you could tell a difference in that girl's personality afterwards. Yeah. The next kid changed her self-worth.
Yes.
Finding an area for a child wins face of contingency.
Absolutely. Well, any other comments? We'll let you go here in a minute. But yeah.
It has more to do with that little girl. And I agree with you completely, Bill, and looking out for these kids. And I think really, we really, guys especially, have to be so careful. We have a girl with her name, I think, I don't remember, Jen, but she wanted to be called Powerhouse. She's a big, loud girl. We were really terrible about that, but loved playing it. And we saw that if the staff and everybody treated this girl as if she had work, because she did, and treated her with kindness and love, all the other kids, we have inner city kids who wanted to laugh at this girl. And we had other kids who wanted to laugh at this girl. But none of them did. They all just like hurt their like, what? And then she
became kind of like a star of the camp.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where I had to sometimes take car out to chill for a while.
Yeah.
But it really does, just like you pointed out, it changes the way they see themselves.
Well,
they want to live it.
Yeah. And yeah, and that's the kid that really finds himself or herself at camp, finds their worth, their self-esteem, can become a powerful influence in the time to come. But even if they don't, if they just find that sense of self-esteem that they can begin to say, God made me, and I've got worth even though I'm not like somebody else, boy, that means so much. You saw the CBS about the little boy, the little boy that was dyslexic or, autistic, yeah. Autistic and made the, sixth straight 3-point shots and you know, just astonishing. Well, let me tell you, we've got a brother, a preacher in the brotherhood who has a son who is autistic. And this boy, I mean, when I preach, he tunes in. And, I mean, he's going... And I mean, he's 22, 3 years old. But, I mean, he is getting what I'm saying, and he is so glad to get it that it's really exciting to him. But that boy was president of his senior class. And not just his senior class. I guess he was president in the 8th grade. And when they went to high school, and all of a sudden there's this boy, you know, that doesn't fit the mold. And other kids say, boy, or some new kid comes in class, he's weird. Hey, don't ever let me hear you say that he's weird again. Let me tell you what, he's one of the coolest guys around. And he had some skills and abilities inside. And they didn't let this kind of behavior keep him from seeing that he was a person of tremendous worth. And he went on to graduate from high school as president of his class, and then went into the business market, into the world market, and recently the company that he's with advanced 3 people, and he was one of the 3. Is he still autistic? Yes. But he knows that his worth is not diminished, is not destroyed, is not negated by the fact that he's got these problems. He knows he has the problems, but he knows his worth's there. And that's a part of what we're all about. Now, what about the adult in your congregation that would find himself or herself if they came to camp and worked on the staff? And I guarantee you that every one of us is from a congregation where there's somebody, not a deacon, not a teacher, not a substitute teacher, or whatever, but would find a place of ministry and service if we will create an awareness that there's a place for them, and create an awareness that they can cope with the challenges. And they can meet the challenges. And by following this little model and putting it to work, I promise you, we can find funds, we can find resources, we can find kids to come to camp. It's all available to us. But you first of all got to create an awareness of the benefits that you have to offer. And then feed information until that information begins to come home. This is something I need to evaluate. I need to think in terms of, does this fit me? And then give them an easy entry point where they can start. I think I told you some of you about when I was invited to be the first president of Camp Indigan. I'd come back from Wisconsin. I said, yes, I probably could do that. We've been really successful in what we've done in Wisconsin, and I'd be glad to consider it. Tell me about your organization. And they said, well, we're Camp Indigan Incorporated. And I said, you have board directors? And they said, yes. And I said, how many? And they said, 26. That was a red flag to me, 26 board members scattered over 3 states. And I wondered about that. I said, well, how big is your membership? How many members do you have? 1. I said, well, he ought to feel awfully well directed. You got 26 directors to direct 1 member and the operation of the camp. Well, what was their problem? Well, there were a bunch of problems. But one major problem was it cost $100 to be a member of Camp Indigan. And that's in 1959. And $100 is a huge chunk of money. Even the doctor on the board of directors, whose son came to Fort Hill with me and was the pilot light that got that thing moving, wasn't a member. And I said, let's start let's create a $10 annual membership. All they have is a $100 life membership. What do you do with $10? I said, well, I do a whole lot more with $110 this than I can $100. And I said, that $10 at least would let us create a bulletin or a newsletter, a flyer that we could send out and let people know what's going on. What was I saying? I didn't know about it then, but I was saying we can create an awareness and we can invite people to our activities. That would give us a start. But a big part of it was it gave a low-level opportunity to try it. And when we bought Paul Hall Glen, we didn't have the money to buy Paul Hall Glen. But before we had the opportunity to buy that camp, I think we had two or three life members and maybe 30 or 40 annual members. But through the awareness that was created by having that site and having people go up and see it and look at it and say, I can participate in it, and I can be like the people who paid the $5,000 for the cabin back here and so on, I can be involved on whatever level I can. And in that first year, after we decided to buy the camp, we had 60 life members at $100 apiece instead of three. But it started with a low level of involvement. Come, look, see, evaluate, think in terms of what you can do and be a part of. And that's what God has given us. Well, my time's up. Our time for discussion is up. I did want to mention, are any of you familiar with Blue Ridge Encampment? It's not a youth camp. It's a family camp. And it's the longest running family encampment of Churches of Christ. Started, I think, in the 50s. I know Iron North used to say, Brother Dale, won't you come to Blue Ridge, the magnificent Blue Ridge? And I never did get to go until last year. But if any of you are interested in considering going to Blue Ridge Encampment, it's June, first full week in June. And this little flyer here will tell you a little bit about it. Some of the speakers are Steve Diggs, Lonnie Johnson, Robert Kimberly, Randy Harris, Steve Diggs, Bill Watkins. No, Bill's not going to be there. Dale Smith. John Smith. Kyla Smith. That's going to be the Smith Hour. And Wayne Kilpatrick. And I don't know who all else. But anyway, look this over. It'd be a wonderful place for you to go as a couple, or a wonderful place for you to go as a family. And it is in a beautiful location just east of Asheville, North Carolina. Okay, we're through with this session. Anything before we break up from here? Is there something to be done?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.